The epic struggle from last weekend is but a memory, where the mighty Colts from the land of the Hoosiers vanquished the Chicago Bears from the frozen shores of Lake Michigan. Yes, the glory of the gridiron has faded, along with the stale hot wing breath of millions of beer-swilling football fans. But one thing remains to usher in this week's episode of Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs. It's the cheap emotional response of overacted voiceover over the top of cheesy dramatic music like this. Yes, football season is over, except for that arena football crap, but who watches that anyway? So make way for science and technology on Inside the Black Box, where scientists and engineers are king, but the football players still get all the hot chicks anyway. And now, Pete Ludovis and Bill Hunt, two men out to prove that engineers can be funny and not just funny looking.
All right, good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I'm inspired.
Are you? But don't you love that?
Yes.
What is that, Inside the NFL kind of thing?
Yeah.
That's actually Pirates of the Caribbean music, but I took an excerpt because I could not resist.
It sounds like,
It does, right?
That sounds like us, yeah.
Don't we need to do that?
Not just funny looking,
inspirational voiceover.
I know.
And now Bill Hunt, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so welcome to Inside the Black Box, Radio Sandy Springs' weekly program on science and technology. I'm Pete Ludovis, along here, along with Bill Hunt. Bill, how you doing?
Good.
What, no giant iced tea this morning?
No, I'm on the water today. Actually, I drank my giant iced tea before I got here.
Oh, okay, so you're caffeinated, huh?
I'm caffeinated.
All right, so let's see, so what was last week's show?
Science in the News? Oh, we're not gonna,
We should recap.
Yeah.
I'm losing it.
You're losing it. Okay, well.
Do you even remember what we did last week?
This is nothing new.
Week before, we had a classic rewind.
Uh-huh.
He's checking his notes now.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. That was Lori Pocock from
Diving.
From Sea Sports Divers
from
up in
Penthouse.
Roswell. Yeah, that's her night job, apparently. the science and technology of scuba diving. And you said, Bill, you were inspired. Mm. You were thinking about actually looking into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you made any headway on that, or is that like
not
all
this,
your New Year's?
Not this week. No, not this week. It'll because actually, like I say, we got the place in Canada. It'd be kind of fun to go down there and see what's underneath the water down
until
there.
Until you see how cold the water is
in
Maine.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so with regard to science in the news, we've got a couple stories, as we always do. The first one, I actually looked this up this morning because have you seen all the stuff in the news and ads about Blu-ray technology?
No.
Blu-ray disc?
Uh-uh.
So nowadays, if you go in and you get a movie or you get media or something like that, they'll say available on DVD or Blu-ray disc. So Blu-ray disc, according to the corporation that put out this standard, the Blu-ray Disc Association, is the name of the next generation optical disc format jointly developed by the Blu-ray Disc Association, a group of the world's leading consumer electronics, personal computer and media manufacturers, including Apple, Dell, Hitachi, HP, JVC, LG, Mitsubishi, Panasonic, Pioneer, Philips, Samsung.
LG's a rap artist, isn't he?
Sony, TDK, and Thompson. Yeah, that's a Korean company. I believe the literal translation is from the 50s. Lucky Gold is what LG stands for.
I thought it was a German company.
No, actually it's Korean.
Really?
LG.
Okay.
These are the guys that make my phone.
Okay.
So in any case, where are we? Okay, so the format was developed to enable recording, rewriting, and playback of high-definition video, as well as storing large amounts of data. To make a long story short, it's called Blu-ray because instead of using a red laser,
they use a
blue laser. Mm-hmm. And you want to explain to us why they use a...
Blue laser has a shorter wavelength,
right,
so you could have better resolution of reading the disc, so higher fidelity, less lower errors, a little bit error rate,
so,
that kind of thing.
So the resolution of the smallest little element you can put on anything scales with the size of the wavelength of light.
Right.
You can do, a few wavelengths? Is about the best
well,
you can do?
In the semiconductor industry, they do some tricks and get part of a wavelength on the lithography by using multiple layers of photoresist. So there are all these kind of tricks you can use to get around it, but it is kind of the the limit. It's certainly a way to look at what's the lowest resolution.
And they can mess
with
the numerical aperture and things like that. But so the wavelength is effectively the limit, and if you half the wavelength, you can double the amount of stuff you put on it.
Right.
You may recall it was a few months ago when Cliff Henderson was here talking about photolithography and how we make microelectronics devices, and he talked about exactly that. So now they don't use visible light. They use something that's almost X-ray, and you can use electron beams, which even have a smaller wavelength to actually make some of these devices. A typical DVD is about, 4.7 gigabytes, so a little under 5 gigabytes. They claim they can get that up to five times as high, so 25 gigabytes is typically what they do. And actually, by messing with the numerical aperture, they think they can go to 50 gigabytes.
You know, I guess it was yesterday I had lunch at the Indian restaurant on 10th and Monroe. Anyway, the guys next to me were very Southern, but they were talking about computer technology.
Right.
So it was just, dang, man, like I, you know, get you a permanent hard drive there, and, you know, it's got like a 60 gigabytes. And they were like, They're accurate.
Well, there you go. I mean, but everyone sees that at one time in their life, right? I mean, I met a thoracic surgeon at Harvard who had the twangiest voice you ever heard in your entire life.
Yeah.
I mean, it teaches you not to judge people.
Right.
So another story from the February 6th New York Times, Orbiting Junk, Once a Nuisance, is Now a Threat, by William J. Broad. So for decades, space experts have worried about speeding bits of orbital debris, the article goes on to say, might one day smash a large spacecraft into hundreds of pieces and start a chain reaction, a slow cascade of collisions that would expand for centuries, spreading chaos through the heavens. They think we're getting near to this sort of critical percolation point.
Really? But so I mean, the issue is that ever since the beginning of, or Sputnik, really, that they just decided when they needed to release an earlier stage, they would just let it go. It's floating out, all this stuff's floating out there.
I mean, some, the lower ones come burn up and
crash and a piece of Skylab crashed down in the late 1970s and landed in almost
Australia, right?
Hit a cousin of mine.
Right. Was this a cousin you liked? Were you hoping?
No, he wasn't right after getting hit with a piece of Skylab. That's all I'm saying. He wasn't really right before he got hit by the piece of Skylab.
Earlier this year, after half a century of growth, the federal list of detectable objects, so they have one for that. It's so detectable object is 4 inches wide or larger, reached 10,000, including dead satellites, spent rocket stages, a camera, a hand tool, and junkyards of whirling debris left over from chance explosions and destructive tests.
Are they like alien spaceships that they just decided not to go any further and those are floating around up there, too?
I think those are classified.
Those are classified. Right. I'm sorry.
Did you learn about those in the Roswell Alien Festival?
Well, I learned a lot at the Roswell Alien Festival.
And they're actually pretty ticked off.
Jay's actually an expert on that. We can get to that some other show.
Okay.
But he is an expert on Roswell.
Right. All right, well, we'll be back after this break, where today's topic is the technology of love, or
S&T for S&M.
And our guest today is Cupid, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break on Radio Sandy Springs, Inside the Black Box, 1620 AM and RadioSandySprings.com. On Radio Sandy Springs, where we're talking about the technology of love, and it's certainly not a small-scale technology. For example, Susan Ornstein from CNNMoney.com on August 3rd, 2003, reports that online dating is a serious business. The industry brings in more revenue than any other category of legitimate paid web content. Wow, and that probably includes porn. I'm impressed.
Right.
More than digital music or business or investing advice, revenues for online dating should hit, and this was back in 2003, $313 million this year, up from $228 million in 2002, according to the Jupiter Research Corporation.
And that's without you and I spending a lot of money.
That's true. I have my own experience, not with online dating, but the old-fashioned kind of dating service.
Right.
We'll get into that later in the show.
Okay.
And,
all right.
And to discuss this, our guest today is Cupid.
Right. I'd like to introduce our guest. The details of Mr. Cupid's career are a bit hazy, but our crack research staff here at Inside the Black Box have found out that Mr. Cupid got his start in about 600 BC back in ancient Greece. He gained great notoriety there, working with the gods on their love problems, and wound up with a lot of mentions in the annals of Greek mythology. He continued on through the millennia, making an appearance in Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. In a recent year, he seems to have fallen on hard times. Working only around Valentine's Day, facing outsourcing issues like a lot of other American workers, and frankly being faced with a lot of new technology, which some of the pundits say have made him obsolete. We're delighted to have him in the studio today. Welcome, Mr. Cupid.
Hey, I'm there, Manny Noon.
Just for one thing, the origin date that we have is 600 B.C. Is that really the when you first started working, or does it go further back?
No, that's when I first got into the union.
And before that, prior to that?
Yeah, I can remember my first job. My first gig was...
You get in front of there, you go.
Oh, yeah. Just got into a new union. Yeah, my first gig, I was working in this, what do you call that? Not a forest, a garden. It was hard work, too. It was easy at first. You would think it would have been easy because nobody wore clothes back then. But I had to get this lady to give an apple to her husband, you know, to get the world started and everything. That was a rough hustle. That was about my first work.
So pretty much from the beginning, you've been with it.
About a week
been
after.
At it. A week after? No vacation for
I noticed you're a Red Bull fan. Me too.
Yeah, you got to get rid of yesterday.
That's my motto, Red Bull, because anything stronger requires a prescription.
So in ancient Egypt, was there a lot of call for your services in ancient Egypt?
Well, I had a rough hustle back then. You know, after building pyramids all day, love wasn't on a lot of people's minds.
I could see that, yeah.
So those stones were heavy.
Had to get them in the mood. What were the gods like in ancient Greece? Did a lot of work with them.
Thor was cool.
He was?
Yeah, it didn't take much work when he pulled that hammer out.
And Zeus, I understand, was a player. He had a lot of...
So you couldn't miss him. He had lightning bolts on the side of his chariot. I think he was the first guy I ever had spinners.
So the pimped-out chariot.
Yeah. They didn't call it back in ancient Greece.
That was a little-known god back then, the exhibit. Mm-hmm. The god of pimping rides. He doesn't get much credit.
Not anymore. Let's see. And then you were when you were working with Shakespeare. Did he ask for any of your help? Did he need any of your help?
Well, I tried to get in touch with old Bill, but if you ever seen him in action, he didn't really need too much help. His cat was smooth. Used to wear his hair in that perm like Al Sharpton. And that clown collar he wore, the ladies used to just melt. You should have seen him.
It's got to be better than Don King hair. That's what I'm thinking.
He's
smooth, man.
And Don King, now that guy took some work.
So since you're in the studio, I notice you're black. Do you prefer African-American?
Oh, it depends on what region I'm getting paid in. See, a long time ago, we used to just have a... Union, everything was segregated. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a black Cupid and a white Cupid. But they didn't care too much in Louisiana.
Either way, down around New Orleans.
Where you're from Mississippi, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'm guessing it's probably similar down there.
Not really. Very different. So, let's see. You're about to pull out something here on the technology.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think what we really want to address is, you know, how things have changed, what Cupid thinks about the modern online dating services and dating services in general, these things that generate multi-tens and hundreds of millions of dollars each year. For example, the two big ones, of course, Match.com, which used to be the largest one, and I think they've just been surpassed by eHarmony. And believe it or not, eHarmony actually uses a lot of advanced technology. I was looking through their information last night and found they actually hold, United States patent, let me see if I can find the number in here. It's entitled A Method and System for Identifying People Who Are Likely to Have Successful Relationships. This thing is 19 pages long, not including the figures. Talks about advanced mathematics, we were talking about before the show, Bill, from principal component analysis to neural networks.
Wow.
And that's what they're using to match people up today. I mean, is that a step forward or a step backwards? What do you guys think?
Depends on whether or not it works. I mean, there are all these people I know in Decatur that are with somebody they met through online dating. So.
Oh, really? So you know a lot of people?
These other that have kids our kids' age. But, you know, I, 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 it, it's not necessarily Match.com or anything
right.
cleverly thought out. You know.
Well, so there's basically three different approaches you can take to this. One is now the online dating service where they take your information through standard personality type surveys, and they do a lot of mathematical tricks on that. The other are just things to increase your exposure, right? You know, whether it's MySpace or Yahoo mm-hmm. Dating, I think, just allows you to interact with people. And then there is sort of the old-fashioned type ones, which is dating services where you went in and paid for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the interesting thing about these. I don't know exactly what these online dating services cost, but they're a few dollars a month. The old, regular ones, where you took the personality services or surveys that you do for online dating, and then they just had people match you up.
Mm-hmm.
You were paying more than $100 an introduction, and that was back 15 years ago when I did it.
Right.
And I've got a friend who's actually a comedian who works up at the Funny Farm who's going through it now, and it's more than $100 an introduction. So maybe we should think about whether or not that's worth it.
It's increased?
Well, yeah, I mean, just with inflation. But, I mean, it's pretty pricey. We'll talk about that okay. and other topics related to online dating here on Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 on your AM dial and RadioSandySprings.com. Back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking about the technology of love. And before the break, we were talking about sort of the old-fashioned kind of dating service. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these, I recommend actually sort of the cheaper ones.
Well, the old form of dating service was called the bathroom wall. But
And then came probably computer dating.
Right.
But think about it. Do you want a guy who color coordinates his USB memory key with his shirt in charge of your love life? I'm thinking that.
Probably not. Probably not, yeah.
But the...
You know, before all this computer stuff came out, I got a patent on some love making, right?
Really?
Yeah. We didn't used to use that for the computers. We used to just have whiskey and breath mint.
Works for me. For me, it was always, oh, thank you, Dave.
Ooh, good, yeah.
Reminiscent of our discussion a couple weeks ago about tequila.
Whiskey and breath mint.
But, yeah, the sort of the old-fashioned way is you go in and you take the same personality inventories that you do on eHarmony.com, that you do on Match.com, but you get matched up the old-fashioned way by people. Mm-hmm. They sort of look at the things. And let me tell you how it works. So I joined when I was in San Jose, and it was a whole bunch of geeky guys, engineers out there, and I was working at IBM. I couldn't even meet guys to hang out with to go out to meet women with. So I went in. And
that's an area where everybody's working 80, 90 hours a week,
yeah,
right?
Well, it's mainly nerds. I mean, it's kind of scary. So maybe it's good for the women,
mm-hmm.
but definitely not for the guys. And you go in, and they get you all excited about this thing, and then they quote you this price, and you're like, well, that's kind of pricey. I don't know about that. But guess how they get you sucked in?
How?
The woman who I was dealing with was a dead ringer for Heather Locklear.
Wow.
And all guys are like, well, if they all look a quarter as good as she does, I'm good to go. And
I was down to a tenth.
Well,
really
yeah, but I mean, you know, I guess if it's women, they get some guy that looks like George Clooney.
Right.
And I signed up. And there you go. So long story short, I went through a service called Together, which I actually think was bought out recently here in the Atlanta mm-hmm. area. But I met my wife through it, so mm-hmm. it can't be all bad.
Now, were you out there when you met her, or were you here?
No, I was actually, you could transfer your membership. So they're nationwide. So, you pay a small fee and you transfer to Boston.
Right.
And the sad thing, the story my wife likes to tell at cocktail parties, she probably told it at your New Year's mm-hmm. party, but you were probably...
Hey.
I signed up for like 18 introductions, right? Because I figure, you know, if I can't meet a decent woman in 18, I'm in trouble. My wife...
Well, you are in trouble. Go ahead. So you went and paid for the
five. She did the sixer. She did the six-pack, and then I think she got it for half price, and then her sister paid for it anyway because she thought she was going to meet an old maid. So.
Right. Well, then, I mean, the one, this was pre online dating, but this was, you actually had to go to the place and look mm-hmm. through the photograph book, and then they had a little videotape
right, this
of everybody.
Is the, when they did videotape.
And,
that's the exposure kind of thing that the internet makes pretty easy now.
Right. But it was a one price deal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And actually, I ended up. Pay that, and then I met my wife through somebody that was my secretary that at one point had introduced.
Wait, your secretary was involved. What's the deal with this?
She actually had introduced about 10 people that ended up getting married and last uh-huh. they've stayed married.
Oh, she should be collecting a fee. Right?
She should have, you know. But so I paid it. But the women seemed to want to get their money's worth out of there.
Yes, you've explained this to me before.
Okay. All right, I'm just saying. Yeah.
So that's how you, but you did do that before meeting your wife.
Yeah, but I ended up not. Okay. You know, I mean, I used it in a sense, but.
Okay.
It wasn't six times and that's it. It was.
Oh, okay. So it was.
Unlimited.
All you can eat buffet.
Well, please don't put it quite that way, but.
My mind's not in the gutter. You weren't going there.
Yeah.
It was a buffet.
It was a buffet, though, right?
But I mean, you know, so a lot of money's changing hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, Cupid, what do you think about this? This multi hundreds of millions of dollar industry.
Is that undercutting, you know, the work that you've been doing?
Do you take Visa and MasterCard now, or what's the story?
Oh, you can pay online now.
PayPal.
Oh, yeah, I got a website and everything. It's secure. You don't have to worry about your numbers getting stolen.
Right, which is more than we can say for most online businesses.
So you do international as well?
Oh, yeah. I got Mrs. Cupid is Chinese.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm all over with.
Well, that Asian market's big, so you know, you gotta go.
Oh, I made a fortune in China.
So, all right. So you sort of did the old-fashioned thing, not the online dating.
Yeah, right? It was pre-online, but I mean, I went through a dating service, and then it ended up being the old-fashioned way. Of course, they had to spend about 6 months convincing my wife that I wasn't a reprobate.
Right.
They had to work on her.
They didn't have the security checks back then.
No, they didn't. And me, they approached and said, do you want to go out with, you know, Mary? And I go, okay. You know, she got two legs and ambulatory.
Yeah.
Fine, I'll take her to lunch.
And based on you, I've met your wife. She's a very patient woman.
Let me just say she has to be.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. So, all right. So with regard to online dating... in an article from June 30th of the New York Times by Hal R. Varian entitled Online Dating, Thin and Rich Works Here Too, I'm starting to get the impression that things haven't changed much, right? So, for example, they point out that having a lot of money is good for attracting email messages in these interactive dating services. Those men reporting incomes in excess of $250,000 received 156% more email messages than those with incomes below $50,000. Apparently, women like men with higher income than they have, but men do not like to date women with lower incomes. Thoughts?
Say that again? Women don't like to date men with lower incomes than them? This is a shock.
So men don't like to date women with higher incomes.
Oh,
I have no problem with that, by the way, ladies. I think that's a fine thing.
Yeah.
Notice more men are willing to compromise that, though.
Well, it depends on, like, K-Fed, for example. I think he was willing to date... somebody that had more money than
that
him.
Guy still owes me. He owes me big.
He does, and I'm guessing the checks are bouncing. He hadn't really paid, you know.
Oh, this guy, he tried to hawk my wings one day. He's doing bad.
Who are some of the celebrities that you've hooked up recently?
Michael Jackson. You familiar with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hooked him up with Elvis's daughter.
Ooh.
Elvis turned over in his grave, and he got a hold of me. He said, hey, you got to do what you got to do, but you got to break that up.
Yeah, this ain't right. Yeah, I understand there's a lot of Elvis fans that weren't too happy about that.
Oh, stop going to Michael Jackson concerts.
Oh, man.
Well, here's the question, right? So we'll talk a little bit about this technology as the show progresses and the advanced mathematics they're using. And what does Match.com do? They allow you for an extra fee... to talk to Dr. Phil.
No.
I think I'd pay an extra fee not to talk to Dr. Phil. And I'm wondering, what is all this technology doing? Is this any better than you know, the one that I did where they just get some hot women that look like Heather Locklear? And by the way, most Together franchises are operated by women and just do their best, like your neighbor, like your grandmother used to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll address this question after we take a quick break here on Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 AM and RadioSandySprings.com. Back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking about online dating technology. So nowadays, of course, the old-fashioned go-in-and-meet-the-Heather-Locklear lookalike has given way to doing it all online. And I got to say, one good thing is probably just better exposure, right? I mean, does anyone here meet women on MySpace.com or Facebook or...
Any one of the three married guys in the room?
Well, okay. That's right. I keep forgetting.
Do we know anybody?
Will be changed. Do we know anybody? No, I don't, because my wife's petite, but she's wiry, so I'm still afraid of her. I don't know. Actually, a good friend of mine who's a comedian, she's met a number of guys on what, MySpace.com, and does not recommend it.
Well, I, you know, like, it's easy enough to hide craziness on a first date.
Yeah.
But online, you know, the insanity can just be kept under, you know, the chainsaw for,
you know, interminable
period of time.
Come through.
Craziness, not so bad. I'll tell you what's hard to hide. Ugly.
Well, that's interesting because in this
that is hard to hide.
We were looking at one of the number one things. So forget all the technology and these personality surveys you're going to take. Looks was still a number one thing, and they said people got more responses when they had a picture, right? So at least you knew what you were getting, right? Who would go
when I did that thing a zillion years ago, the there was one that fortunately I can't remember her name, but she was like 6 feet tall, had played college basketball, was gorgeous, and I went to meet her and like, whoa, those were old pictures. those were not very recent.
Pre-industrial accidents.
Yes. Before the before she got dipped into the vat of acid, you know.
But yeah, we were talking about this during the break, that in the same New York Times article on, you know, you can't be too rich or too thin. There's sort of this Lake Wobegon effect that only 1% of the population that was studied in this paper that actually came out of economists from the University of Chicago and MIT, which makes me question their ability to judge.
Don't they have better things to work on?
They said only 1% of the population admitted to having less than average looks. Even so, only a third actually posted a photo. Don't you get suspicious if there's no photo?
Well, you didn't look at the rest of the results. 99% of the people surveyed were confirmed liars.
And they must be, right? Because at MySpace, not that many people make more than $250,000 a year. I refuse to believe that.
Right.
So that definitely...
That's why I like that personal touch. When I'm flying around with my arrows, my wife, she knows. She's the one sending me out there still matchmaking.
Now, do you have to tip the arrows with anything in particular these days? I mean, has it just gotten more complicated?
Well, it depends. A long time ago, we used to use just Coca-Cola, you know, for that sweet taste afterwards. But nowadays, they want that Viagra.
You got to tip the arrows with Viagra.
Oh, yeah, you got to dip them in there. It's hard to ground those little pills up. Those are tough little pills.
I bet.
And they were actually designed to be dissolved with stomach acid. But
right.
Nobody envisioned me and my arrows.
Well, you got to take advantage of advanced pharmaceutical technology.
Yeah, that's right. It's out there.
Cuts my work in half.
Yeah.
There you go. So whether it's online dating or you're going into, one of these more traditional things, the first thing you almost always do for these is take some sort of personal profile, personality inventory, things like that. And believe it or not, they actually use these in industry all the time. To try to weed out the crazy people.
Or in the case of hooking somebody up with the CIA or NASA, they get the crazy people.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Were we talking about
that? We did not talk about that.
No, I was talking about that with somebody else, actually. Oh, yeah, another friend of mine who said that they're looking for people with a little mental edge for those.
Well, I think you and I did talk about it. Yeah, meeting I can't talk about last week, but somebody that was saying that when they look for people for special ops, crazy is good.
Yeah.
It's going to take that to be dropped off somewhere. You don't know where you are.
Yeah, so if you're going to be taking in special ops and fight your way out, you better be crazy or they really don't want you.
Right. Yeah.
So they actually screen for people with some serious problems.
Cordial is not good.
Cordial. Excuse me, sir. I'd like to come through here and mind if I assassinate your leader?
So,
that wouldn't work out, yeah.
So, and usually what you do, you spend at least a good half hour or so, and I know this is true for eHarmony as well. I spent a good 45 minutes taking these things. You answer lots and lots of questions. Usually they're Scantron sort of things. And you have literally 100, 200 questions. So that's the dimension.
I feel like the SAT.
It's a lot like that.
Susan is to
number two pencil,
Jane
sort of
as
reading comprehension.
Very analytical.
Their goal is, because
a little bit of calculus.
People, can deal with, that's maybe the dating service you went to. Nerds are us.
Yes, we be nerds.
So it's they want to reduce the dimensionality of the data. So literally what they do is they do anything they can. They do linear algebra techniques. We're going to talk
about what reduce the dimensionality
So you have maybe 200 questions. So you've got 200 dimensional data, right? There's a variation in 200.
So let's say it was the answer could have been 1 through 5
right.
of how much you like
right.
this versus like
tendency
that.
To be a psycho killer, 1, very likely, 5, very unlikely. That's
right, and so you've got 200 of these, so instead of just X, Y, and Z, three dimensions, you've got 200 axes, basically.
Yeah, and you want to get that down to something that's a smaller dimension, and there's lots of mathematical tricks, we may talk about those in a minute, to get you there. Usually you want to get those down to 10, 12, 20 at the most, sort of clusters, and these are personality types.
But what if somebody lied on the personality test?
Well, you know, then they're going to end up someplace else and these sorts of things. And I question the value of these. I think what these online dating services are doing is very advanced technology, and it's good stuff, but you know, the article from the New York Times implied still looks and obviously income are two big predictors. So,
yeah.
I mean, if you find this person, you know, reasonably engaging, this will tell you whether or not you'll set the bed on fire with them in it after 3 months or so.
Yeah.
Personality.
So, basically, you take a 200-question test to find out that you don't like broke and ugly.
That's a big part of it, right? So it makes me question.
See, he's reduced the dimensionality right there. But Cupid could knock it down to like one question, right?
Oh, you know, that's
no two dimensions: cute, ugly, you know,
and broke.
No, yeah. That's exactly they
said broke and ugly. That's
they said
two dimensions.
You know, thin and rich on the New York Times article, but I like that broke and ugly. That works well. Now the problem is that when you take this 200 dimensional space and move it down to something, you know, a tenth the size. Not everyone fits in the clusters. The clusters are where most people go.
And a cluster is?
So a cluster is what these psychology profiles would call a personality type, something like that.
So in other words, a region in this multidimensional space where you get a lot of points in there, that's a cluster.
Right. Right. Yeah, so for example, if you answer the question, are you quiet? And you said, I'm relatively quiet. And if you answer the question and say, you know, are you relatively deferential to people? And you said, yes. But if you answered those two opposite, those usually don't cluster very well.
Right.
So there are people that don't fit the profiles. They're left out in the cold.
And we need to pick this up after a short break.
And we'll talk about what happens to those people. And this may have happened to you if you logged on to eHarmony.com after the break here on Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 AM and RadioSandySprings.com. Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking about online and dating service technology. And
with Cupid, our guest.
And before the break...
Yeah, you know.
Cupid Jones, I mean.
Right. Well, we were talking about reducing variable space from these surveys, and Cupid very aptly reduced it to broke versus ugly.
Yes, X and Y. That's all you need, broke, ugly. Yeah.
Two-dimensional
Where do you fit two-dimensional space? Where are you? Right. Where do you cluster up in the broke and ugly space?
Right. But the New York Times article agrees, and believe it or not, that was based, let me see if I can find it, that was based on a 62-page technical article that made a similar conclusion by Günter J. Hitch, Ali Hortaksku, I think I'm pronouncing that Turkish C with the tail under correctly, and Dan Ariely, first two authors from economists from University of Chicago, and Dan's from MIT. So there you have it. You know, in 30 seconds, he takes 63 pages of scholarly work.
You know, he hadn't been at this, you know, since 1 week after it all started and not know his business.
Experience, baby.
You know, right. Yeah.
But
of course, there are other times, like I imagine during the Black Plague in the 1300s, where you got a third of the people died, population died. It's probably pretty easy to get your job done during those times, right?
Oh, it didn't take much. You can pretty much tell who was going to make it or not. You don't have to waste any time on them.
So if you got a pulse, you're good to go.
If you saw a ring around the Rosie's pocket full of pulses.
Yeah, that's where I came from. That's where I came from. And that's what the indication was that it pretty much didn't matter. Women were very willing to have a mentally retarded person father their children because Steve was dead, Johnny was dead, everybody was dead. So you know, get the guy that rode the short bus.
So basically,
come
good
over the
news
house.
For nerdy guys like us is what you're saying.
If you need a plague, a plague coming.
I think that was around Shakespeare's time.
Yeah, right before Shakespeare. It started cranking back up after that. But, they weren't, let's just say women weren't too picky, you know.
That's why I had to change that song to Ring Around the Rosies, because the original song they had for it, not a big seller.
It's all about the marketing.
So I think it was something like black, deaf, no more willing men left.
Need to spice
there you
it.
Go.
need to spice it up a little bit,
So,
kids.
So speaking of that reduction of multidimensional data spaces, what happens when they try to take these 200 questions and put it into, you know, a dozen or two personality types? And if you've ever taken one of these at a job, they mainly give them to you to find out, you know, will you get along with your manager? Will you kill the guy in the cubicle next to you? This sort of thing.
Or will you come back in around 4:30 after you've been laid off and shoot everybody in the
Yeah,
office?
I mean,
they like to know that up front.
They try to see, you know, if you understand you're this kind of personality, you can get along with people better. Mm-hmm. So, but what happens is every once in a while, you don't fit in one of the clusters. So what happens is you're just left out there. And they give you this. I'm looking at a personality inventory test that I actually took as part of a leadership conference. And, you know, they say, you know, before you go any further, review your profile graph scores and the possibility of errors made in computing your responses. They basically say you're a mutant and you don't fit anywhere.
Right.
Now, as bad as this is, believe it or not, I had a friend who logged on to eHarmony.com just a few weeks ago. She took the personality profile and the same thing happened. They flashed this message up and says, look, you don't fit any of the profiles. You may not want to do this. And they basically said they can't guarantee their service. So,
does she have any superpowers?
Not that I know of. I'm not sure how she answered those particular questions.
There's a guy in Professor X. He's in a wheelchair. He helps out people like that.
Okay, there you go. So maybe she's an X-Men.
Cube was saying it, you know, pops up a link to Insurrection or one of those places right near.
Right. No one will love you, so...
You should.
Right.
You should love yourself. Right. That's the recommendation.
It's a link right there at killyourself.com.
And, okay, as sad as this is, I have to say that I actually think what they're doing is reasonable. I mean, they're saying, look, they've got all this advanced technology, which is patented, but if you fall outside the mathematical correlations that they are claiming are very, very good, they're at least going to tell you. So they're saying, look, no more guarantees.
You're going to be an old maid. Yeah. You'll never find somebody who'll put up with you. So, good. That's very positive to give
those
them
that are
news.
The people I get the most emails from.
I bet.
Oh, Cupid, please, can you help me? Can you help me? Nobody loves me.
But Cupid can't tell them that there's nobody that can love them. You can't. That's just not your tradition,
there's
right?
Oh, always somebody. Yeah. Cupid's no quitter.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's the union rules. You can't just say,
if I can help out Rasputin, I can help out anybody.
Funky-looking dude, too.
He was the funkiest.
That name fit him.
Yeah, it did. Wow. But it was a Rasputin or a Rasputin? Oh.
The mystic Sputum. Holy man.
It's not, he's not even paying attention. But
that went right over my head.
It did. But my younger son, Roger, this is a couple of years ago, and he was sitting around with a laptop, and we don't have video games in the house, but he was doing something on the internet. We don't really pay too much attention. They're both good kids. And so anyway, he comes up to me later in the day, and he said, Dad, I was on the internet, and I got this pop-up for Match.com. And I go, oh, no, I should have put a blocker on there. And he says, I'm 4'6", white, live in Decatur, Georgia, brown hair, blue eyes. And I said, oh, I'm thinking to myself, oh, no, I should have gotten a blocker. He says, yeah, they hooked me up with Michael Jackson. So he basically waited until I was pasty white, about ready to have a heart attack. Then he pulled it back.
So. Well, that's good. He's learning comedic style from his dad.
No, he's way beyond me. So.
Oh, okay. But how to jerk your chain, basically.
Yeah. Wow. So.
But, so with regard to this technology that eHarmony uses, and Match.com, I'm sure, uses very similar stuff. Most of these sites do. eHarmony is actually patented, right? We mentioned it before. It's entitled A Method and System for Identifying People Who Are Likely to Have a Successful Relationship. And basically it uses all the tools that we would talk about. We talked about this before the break, principal component analysis, mm-hmm. where you sort of take those questions and take a combination of all of them. So
principal component analysis, explain that for the people that didn't take advanced
linear
algebra.
That's a tough one, because basically, help me out here, you put this thing in a giant matrix, all your answers, a 200 by 200 matrix of
rows questions. And columns of numbers.
And then the best way to think about it is some of them are not independent. Some of them don't vary much. So, for example, we do an exercise in the math classes to do regression mm-hmm. and correlation. And
I'm all about regression, but go ahead.
Yeah, age is a bad, mentally, for us. Yeah. Age is a bad indicator because it has very little variation in a sophomore class. Everybody's 19 or 20, right? So it's not a big
somewhat,
deal.
Yeah.
So you want to throw that out. That's not a good component. You want to keep only the principal components.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what you do is you make linear combinations. You add up all these things, and you rotate that space. That's the mm-hmm. best way to think about it, until you find a combination of it that has most of the variance, and then mm-hmm. the second most variance, and you throw out the ones that don't really change much. And that's what principal component analysis is. And I think what you're finding, obviously, is the sum of ugly and not broke.
Yeah.
Ugly and broke, that's one of your principal
mo
components.
Mo broke and mo ugly is what
right.
we're
so,
yeah.
So we'll continue talking about this and sort of wrap
mo
things up
broke and
after
mo
the break
ugly.
Here on Inside the Black Box on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 AM and RadioSandySprings.com. All right, welcome back to Inside the Black Box, here where we're talking about the advanced technology used by companies like Match.com and eHarmony. eHarmony, for example, has their technology patented. They use principal component analysis to say get rid of the non-important sort of things, and then they actually take that and the original data and process it through something called a neural network. That's actually mentioned in the patent. Mm-hmm. And neural network, correct me if I'm wrong on this, probably the most oversold technology of the 70s and 80s.
That or artificial intelligence.
Well, yeah, so neural and that's
yeah.
neural network.
So the neural network idea is that you've got an algorithm or mathematical thing that supposedly acts the way your brain acts.
Yeah, and that's the misnomer.
And the thing is that we don't know enough about, and it's thousands and thousands of inputs and outputs on neurons and all that. So, so the neural network is really just an architecture for doing analysis that we don't understand, but if it gets an answer, that was good.
And it's very good mathematical technique. What you do is you have a whole bunch of nodes and
it learns.
Your inputs and you combine them.
Yeah.
And usually you don't combine them like
my mom didn't like me to have nodes, but go ahead.
There you go. And by the way, Bill, nothing mimics the neural activity of your brain. I don't think that's the
I think that's true. That's true. Or the hair jelly.
The nice thing is when you combine them, you don't just add them together mm-hmm. in certain weighted amounts. You can multiply them by a nonlinear function, usually sort mm-hmm. of an S-curve called a sigmoid. Mm-hmm. So if it's got nonlinear response, like things that, you might be attracted here, but very unattracted there. There's a threshold.
I dated a girl from Cleveland with nonlinear response.
Yes, yeah. I mean, sort of like serial killer. Yes, no. That's either there or not. It's not it's not a linear sort of thing where it ramps up. So it's very good technology, but you're absolutely right, Bill. The name neural net made it sound like it behaved like a brain, and it really has nothing to do with that.
No.
So it's good technology, but now as we come to the end of the show, the question is, Where have we gone with all this technology? Is it really all that great?
Well, I think what we've learned is that Cupid's who's been at this for thousands of years, if not millions of years, is right. It just gets down to broke and ugly. And if you want to find somebody, don't be broke and don't be ugly.
The two output neural net.
Yeah.
And if you are high on the broken ugly scale, Cupid's mm-hmm. output of Cupid's advice is
whiskey and breath mints.
Whiskey and breath.
Never let you down.
If you actually think about it, the way we used to date was in bars. Those were the mainstays of dating, right?
Right.
And the formula is one breath mint for every four shots of whiskey.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we even have the high-tech ratio.
Right, and then you've got other parameters like the time left to closing time.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
lack of a ride.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Being evicted.
Yeah, because if you've been evicted, you can't take her back to your crib, right?
Right. No, you've got to go to her place.
But if she's been evicted.
Oh, that's a different story.
Time is cut in half. You only need two whiskeys.
Because she needs a place to stay.
You always get them with the lodging.
Right. So, I mean, and maybe this is looking at the fact that science and technology, useful, right? I mm-hmm. think it is useful, right? Because
right.
just the internet alone, having the exposure right. to people.
But, you know, I think good. Part of it, too, is just in our culture, people are looking for kismet, you know, just this miraculous.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a day-to-day relationship, that's, you know, that's you can have that to go back to, but you're not necessarily going to get. I mean, look at Oprah. She's been looking around for a while. She's got Cupid on retainer. She's still not married.
That's one of my biggest accounts.
Well, she can afford them, yeah.
See,
yeah.
A lot of people don't know. Oprah pays me an undisclosed amount every month.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Stepman pays me twice that much for the antidote every month.
So you will work both sides of a deal, apparently.
Right. Oh, you know, you got to be liberal, you know.
Right. So there it is. Maybe the old-fashioned way is the best.
Yeah.
That you can't put in a neural network whether or not, you know, yeah. you like her, you think she's hot, just, or the same effect of whiskey and breath mint.
Just don't be broken ugly. That's what Cupid says.
Yeah. But I got to tell you that, so I got set up with my wife through this, you know, dating mm-hmm. service where we took all these inventories. I went there. I was an hour late, and she was sitting next to...
Do what?
I was an hour late for the date.
And she ended up marrying you?
Yeah, she married me anyway. And the funny
Jesus.
Thing is, there was a woman next to her who can only aptly be described as a barfly who mm-hmm. chewed me a new one when I got there, too.
For being late.
And it still worked out anyway. So
yeah.
How's that barfly doing?
I don't know. I may still have her number. I could hook you up.
I haven't heard from her in a while.
All right. So maybe that's our conclusion that, you know, technology helps, but there's no substitute for...
Not being broken ugly.
And whiskey and breath mints.
You right. need those.
You got to have them. Have
All right.
Them.
Well, we want to thank Cupid for being our guest. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's been Cupid. A pleasure being here.
Oh, that's the point.
There you go.
All right. So, and next week's show, Bill?
Is in the works.
Okay.
Probably Annie Zangwill.
Annie Zangwill talking about Einstein.
Yeah.
I'm going to be out of town.
It's going to be Zangwill and Einstein, two words you'll never hear in the right. same sentence.
I will be in Chicago. At
really?
Comedy
oh, how'd that Super Bowl go?
What Super Bowl?
The one in Chicago in the Super Bowl?
I'm going to rub that in when I get back there.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, tonight.
Yeah, I got to get in touch with Rex Grossman's wife, too.
There you go. That's kind of going to help. And then tonight, just a reminder, Bill and I will both be with the largest collection of nerds in the state doing stand-up comedy at the Relapse Theater.
Right.
8:30 is when the show starts, 7:30 is when doors open, with headliner Dan Mangini in the second annual Pocket Protectors and Other Fashion Statements, sponsored by the Atlanta Area MIT Alumni Club. And if you go to our website, and you can get to my website, that's drpcomedy.com/MIT, it's right on the front page. You can still buy tickets online for tonight's event, Pocket Protectors and other fashion
Yeah, and at this place, you'll find tons of people that aren't broke, but damn, they are ugly.
Or at least nerdy.
Yeah.
But they do have a lot of whiskey there.
Yeah, actually, they do. You know that about
the
Relapse Theater. Yeah. All right, thanks again, and we'll see you next week on Inside the Black Box here on Radio Sandy Springs, 1620 on your AM dial, and RadioSandySprings.com.